you can host the best backyard barbecue. When you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Welcome to another weekend bonus episode of the Tech Meme Ride Home. I'm Brian McCullough. When issues of consumer data and consumer privacy come up on the show, I think I've asked out loud a couple of times before, what are the laws here in the United States? Who owns my data? What are the rules? What mechanisms are even in place to give me any sort of semblance of control over my data? Are there any at all? Well, Justin Brookman is the Director of Consumer Privacy and Technology Policy at Consumer Reports. He was also previously at the Federal Trade Commission. As you'll hear, he confirms to me that there are essentially no nationwide rules or laws in place around a lot of this stuff. Whatever rules are in place are sort of tangential statutes that have been drafted into service in an attempt to address modern issues that the statutes weren't even designed for. So is a big federal data and privacy regulatory regime coming soon? What might that look like? And by the way, the states aren't waiting. They're already beginning to pass consumer data and privacy laws, but do they even have the right to do that? Oh, and is the FTC about to bring the hammer down on Facebook? Spoiler alert, Justin thinks most definitely, because the FTC knows it needs to make a statement. Anyway, think of this as another episode where I educate myself on corners of the tech world that I don't know super much about, and hopefully I educate you along with me. What is, I feel like I've read conflicting things about this. What is the current like framework for things like privacy and regulations around our data? Like, is there even a legal or regulatory framework in terms of the control I have over my own data?
So historically, no. So like over the years, like lots of countries around the world have passed like privacy laws, or you know, comprehensive privacy laws. The United States never got around to that. What the Federal Trade Commission is the organization that enforces what the little privacy law we do have in the U.S. But they mostly use this kind of old general purpose consumer protection statute that was passed at the beginning of the last century, which says don't commit deceptive and unfair practices. And so, and it's mostly the deception side. So the laws basically don't lie, and that's good. That's a good law to have. But because of that, there's not a lot of affirmative limitations on what companies can do. They just can't misrepresent it. So that's why privacy policies tend to be really long and vague and expansive and written by lawyers. And in most cases, as long as they don't like violate something they went out of their own way to say, they're going to be okay. There's the unfairness side, and there's like a long kind of legal test for that, but it's hard, and it wasn't really written with privacy in mind. The FTC hasn't used it on that very much, though they're starting to get pressured to do more. And then we've had a few statutes here and there that have been passed over time to look at specific issues like kids' privacy or financial records, or like super sensitive things. But they're definitely the exception and not the rule. And so, like a lot of what's happening in Congress and in the states and other the general conversation is that maybe we need to have something a little more stringent and comprehensive than we currently have.
So what you're describing is whatever sort of like slaps on the wrist or, you got caught doing something bad, we're going to fine you. That's all basically up to this point in the U.S. happened sort of via scotch tape and stitching together like existing laws that don't actually fit what we would think they're trying to do.
Yeah, there's that. And then there's like the fact that the Federal Trade Commission, like they kind of got fairly aggressive on consumer protection issues in the 1970s, doing stuff around kids and advertising, and like the critics would say they're kind of micromanaging funeral homes, and like they kind of were perceived overstepping their bounds. And so like some of their their authority was actually, and it's not about privacy specifically, but overall, was taken away, like in the early Reagan years. And so like they actually can't find most of the time, even if you do commit a deceptive practice or break the law such as it is, FTC can mostly just say, okay, promise not to do that again, and that's it. They can't issue rules in most cases. So they half their staff is gone. They just got kind of decimated, and so like you know they're stuck trying to enforce like I said a statute that wasn't meant to apply to this with a lot less resources than they ever had.
Maybe this is a slightly different issue, but. So then there is no legal framework for my data, for I visited this website, or you know that I am within 30 feet of where I'm standing, or you know how long I... Like, there is no framework for, I guess, the ownership of that. Like, this is mine, and I have some say on how it's used or who it's given to.
That's right. The law probably says, as long as... in their privacy policy, they don't mischaracterize that, then they're probably fine. So, which is why when you download an app, it can collect your geolocation and can spew it to a bunch of other places with no consequences or accountability. There's just no affirmative protections in place to deal with that.
So is it a case of, because there's been nothing in place, it's just all of these companies have rushed into the void and been like, well, there's no reason why we can't do this, so we'll just keep doing it until someone tells us to stop?
I think that's right. I mean, yeah, and you know, it's a very competitive marketplace. They're all looking for some angle. But I mean, you know, advertising has been what, you know, we decided whether it was a conscious decision or not, but that's been the model by which a lot of stuff has been monetized online. And I think a lot of folks are starting to revisit that. Like, was that the right decision? Like back in the 90s when you know, the web business models were being set up, and, you know, back then, Clinton administration, internet seemed pretty awesome, and everyone's like, let's not regulate this. This is really cool. And then, like, you know, but it's been like, concerns around privacy, they've just gotten more acute over time as companies have gotten better about doing stuff. And so now, you know, you surf around and all your ads are based on where you were like a few minutes ago. And like you said, like geolocation, something that is freely trafficked. And I think this combination of growing awareness about what's going on combined with, you know, concerns around micro-targeting, you know, the 2016 election, and just in general, this general sense that maybe this internet isn't just all awesome. Maybe there are some more rules we need to have in place to address some of this stuff.
So then what is your take on the political mood or the legislative mood? Do you think we're going to see some meaningful nationwide laws at least proposed or coming down the pike soon?
Yeah, I mean, there's been a lot of things proposed already. I think there's been like, I don't know, 5, 6, 7, 8 or so bills that have been put out there so far. So there's definitely a flurry of interest, and you know, in both like the House and Senate, and you know, the House, the Democratic, the Senate's Republican, but they both have had a lot of hearings on this, and so I think there's like more bipartisan interest in passing laws and passing regulations than there was, you know, even like 5 years or so ago. You know, Republicans tend to be kind of more anti-regulatory, but, you know, during the Mark Zuckerberg hearings last year, you heard a bunch of Republican congressmen saying, you know, maybe we need, you know, GDPR, like stuff like the European privacy law here in the United States. You don't usually hear a lot of Republicans advocating for European-style regulation, but you're starting to hear that a lot more than you used to. You know, I bet against Congress doing something just because the default is they won't, and it's, you know, hard enough for them to pass a budget. So, you know, imagining them coming up with a framework to comprehensively address privacy, it would be surprising, but there's definitely more interest in it than there ever was. And I think there's also, I guess, you know, some concerns about, you know, California just passed a law. A bunch of other states are considering passing laws.
Right. So the federal part of this is only one part of it. The states can also do their own thing here.
The states are definitely doing their own thing, whether they're allowed to or not. I guess the courts will decide. But it's probably suboptimal if each state regulates the internet in radically different ways. And I think there have been court challenges to the one law that has passed in California. But you can understand like where states are coming from. Like, you know, if the federal government's not going to do it, well, they want to, you know, offer citizens the protections. And so, you know, the California law went into place, and now you're seeing other states say, well, yeah, why should California citizens have some semblance of privacy rights and we don't? So, like, you know, Washington state's looking at stuff, Maryland, New Mexico, North Dakota, again, traditionally a red state. But, you know, I think this is a fairly bipartisan issue that we want some more agency over our digital lives.
What specifically is in that California law?
So there's four main pieces. The one, like, better transparency. Like, we talked about privacy policies. They don't really say much today. There should be more information in there for those of us who do read them. Access to your information. If someone has that information about you, you should, you know, tell them what it is. The right to delete data. If I have a file with someone, if it's not needed for like record, if it's not needed to fulfill a transaction or, you know, fraud prevention, then in most cases they have to get rid of it, take my data down. And then like the biggest piece is like I can opt out of the sale of my information. So if I go to a store and, you know, they sell information about me to data brokers, to add me to like marketing lists or whatever, I have a right to say, no, don't do that. And that's like the kind of affirmative rights around privacy that we've really never had in this country.
And that's being challenged in the courts because it's unclear if California has the legal ability to do that on its own?
Yeah, so there's a couple of challenges, and I'm probably going to not get all of them, but one is the element of the Constitution called the Commerce Clause, which is with the premise being that the states can't do things that radically undermine commerce. And so there's like old cases in like the 1890s where like every state had like the same railroad gauge, and then Michigan, to favor some local business, like said, every railroad gauge needs to be like a foot or 6 inches shorter. So they had to change cars once they crossed the line into Michigan, and the Supreme Court said, no, you guys are interfering with commerce. You can't do that. I think there are some folks saying that California, by putting in, you know, rules around privacy, is effectively doing the same thing, burdening interstate commerce. You know, there's other challenges too. There's First Amendment challenges. If I go to a store and I buy some shoes, like the store might say, I have a First Amendment right to say that Justin likes shoes, or you just sell it to a data broker. You know, there's been some successful. The courts have taken a more expansive view of corporate free speech in the last 20 years. Certainly, new Justice Kavanaugh has taken a very expansive view of corporate free speech. And so, it will be struck down on those grounds as well. We'll see.
I'm going to a big AI startup demo day here in the city tomorrow, and I will 100% be decked out in Mack Weldon clothing. Why? Well, Mack Weldon makes timeless apparel with modern performance fabrics for guys who want to look and feel sharp without sacrificing comfort. Mack Weldon clothes are designed to fit your style and the demands of modern life. They look like regular clothes, but feel like the latest in modern comfort. They're the go-to choice for guys who want to look great without even trying. Breathable underwear that keeps you cool, dry, and comfy all day. That's their AirKnit underwear. Crazy, comfortable, but elevated sweatpants, the Ace Collection. An upgraded classic polo with antimicrobial silver threads, the Silver Peak Polo. That's my personal fave. And ultra-soft antimicrobial tees for when you need to stay fresh longer. Their silver crewneck t-shirt. Get timeless looks with modern comfort from Mack Weldon. Go to MackWeldon.com and get 20% off your first order with promo code RIDE. That's MackWeldon.com, promo code RIDE. We all know there are things in life that you have to compromise on, but when it comes to your health, there is no compromise. So don't go back to that one doctor who uses your appointment to catch up on the latest headlines, their family group chat, their crossword puzzles, just because they're available right now or they take your slightly sketchy insurance. Instead, check out ZocDoc, the place where you can find and book doctors who will make you feel comfortable, listen to you, and prioritize your health. And you can search by location, availability, and insurance, so literally no compromises here, because with ZocDoc, you've got more options than you know. ZocDoc is a free app and website where you can search and compare highly rated in-network doctors near you and instantly book appointments with them online. Once you find the doc you want, you can book them immediately. No more waiting awkwardly on hold with a receptionist. And these docs all have verified reviews from actual real patients. We're talking about booking appointments with tens of thousands of top-rated, patient-reviewed, credible doctors and specialists. I have personally used ZocDoc to find a podiatrist when I needed one for the first time ever in my life. Go to ZocDoc.com/techmeme and download the ZocDoc app for free. Then find and book a top-rated doctor today. That's ZocDoc.com/techmeme. ZocDoc.com/techmeme.
We had a discussion on here recently about the idea that maybe the cat's already out of the bag or the horses are out of the barn, whatever analogy you want to use, that maybe either you have to just throw your hands up in the air and give up, or you have to start drawing the line at whatever the next frontier is. So what about like things like connected devices inside the home? That clearly seems to be the obvious sort of next big thing that everyone's moving towards. What do you think about the idea of privacy and data now that we're talking about literally, you know, eyes, ears inside the privacy of our own home?
Yeah, no, I think you can make. I'm not willing to see the rest of it as well, because again, geolocation information is really sensitive. You know, web browsing often takes place in our own home and is incredibly revealing.
Right.
And so,
right.
It's hard to retrofit privacy protections onto all that. But I think most people want to, and I think is a reasonable goal. But you're absolutely right. That, you know, inside the home, you know, super sensitive stuff. You know, more and more appliances have sensors, microphones, cameras. You know, we don't necessarily want those to be on all the time. There should probably be some rules about, you know, when the manufacturer can just flip on a switch and figure out what's going on. And it can't just be like, well, this is big data. It's interesting. We want to train our AI. No, I think it's reasonable for folks to not want that. And certainly in the government privacy context, there has been this idea that you know, like a fortress of your home, right? This is like Justice Scalia was all about.
Exactly.
It's like your
right.
own property. There's a rule there. And so, like, you know, you can't – and even like using technology to try to penetrate that, right? You can't hold a heat lamp or a heat sensor up to someone's house to get a sense of their growing pot inside. You can't bring like drug sniffing dogs, or I guess it's kind of low tech, but you can't bring them to the porch to try to see what's going on. So there is like this concept in criminal law where, again, we have constitutional protections. And so I think it does make sense that at the very least from a policy perspective, you know, we should have higher heightened expectations about, you know, how these devices are going to treat our information within the context of our own home. And so I think that, you know, that could certainly be an element of privacy legislation.
What about the idea of software updates and things like that? I did a story a couple weeks ago about, I mean, this was hardware where it turned out that there was a microphone in a Nest thing or whatever that no one knew
right.
about that they'd, but not only, but forget about that where it's like, oh, we hit a microphone. Oh, by the way, we had an extra microphone in there. But you can functionally do things with software now where if I buy a device and bring it into my home to do a thing, and then via a software mm-hmm. update, it can end up doing something completely different down the road. Like, is there anything in place to, I guess I know the answer. There's nothing in place to prevent that from happening.
I don't know. Maybe. I guess it depends on what it does. But you can certainly, Matt, you know, make an argument that it could be deceptive, to suddenly, you know, fundamentally change the nature of the product. Or as I said, you know, the other general legal authority is unfairness. And there you kind of have to prove it's been harmful and the consumer can't avoid it. And, like, you know, if something like, you know, radically changes such that it does, you know, deprive the consumer of the benefit of the bargain. And obviously, they can't avoid it because the software was and it changed remotely. Then that you might be able to make the case. So when I was at the Federal Trade Commission before I took this job, and one of the cases that I worked on was a smart hub that Nest bought called Revolve, and Nest bought Revolve, and Google bought Nest, and then Google's probably like, we got too many hubs here. And so they just shut down server support for it. And so like this thing that people paid $250 for, it suddenly it's like a brick. It's a paperweight.
Right. There's a lot of that been happening lately. There was a story recently about like those $800 robots that all of a sudden the company shut down. And
right.
They shut it down from the server. Like it became a paperweight.
That's right. And so in that case, the FTC sent a letter saying like, okay, because you are issuing full refunds to everyone who did this, and you're sending out notice to everyone, we're not going to bring a case. But I think the implication being that, you know, maybe if they didn't do that, right, then maybe it would potentially violate the law. And so certainly if you sell someone something for $800 the next day, you know, like they snap their fingers like Thanos and it just shuts down, I would argue that that's probably prohibited by existing law. Because again, it's deceptive, but you sold someone something and then they're not getting what they paid for. You know, then query, you know, where the line is, right? You know, is someone required to issue like security updates to a smart toaster for 40 years? Like, maybe not. But, you know, where's the line? And I think, you know, that's a place where consumer expectations are, I'm not sure there are expectations. But certainly the legal norms are being developed. But it's something that I think, you know, if you buy something, there has to be some reasonable expectation that it's going to work for like some natural life of the product. But I think there's just not a lot of like understanding of what those norms and legal requirements are.
Okay, this is a little unfair. I'm not going to ask you to be like, all right, solve all the problems for us. But are there two or three maybe simple common sense like regulations or rules that we could put in place that would help us in the area of either consumer privacy or just even consumer rights and control over personal data?
Yeah, so I guess an easy one is around security. And the FTC and some of the states have done a little bit, have tried to interpret the law to require reasonable security, but, you know, just passing statutes saying, you know, if you have a connected device, or you have information, you know, something that could be misused, you know, you need to use reasonable, security to safeguard either the information or to prevent like a connected device from DDoSing someone. You know, I think we've seen statutes get close to that. I think that's an area where I can imagine Congress doing something, and you know, it being pretty bipartisan. You know, privacy is a trickier piece. You know, I think one element that I'd like to see in law is kind of notion about data minimization, like, you know, just collect what you need for what the consumer is asking for, not, again, like in a smart home, not just having the sensor on all the time because it might end up being interesting, but to kind of just collect what's needed and keep it only as long as needed and only share it.
Right. And like, sorry to interrupt it, but I mean, like, it could be, this is what I'm saying. I wasn't saying the horses are out of the door, but, and so screw everything in the past, it's too late. But I'm saying, like, now, what if you just passed a law that said, if I buy a speaker that I intend to use primarily to stream music or whatever, mm-hmm. that it can only collect the data that it needs to do that function that I expected it was going to do when I brought it into my home? Like, is that as simple as that? Is that something that's possible?
Yeah, no, I think that would be reasonable, and I think that's again another case I worked on at the FTC was around smart TVs that were trying to generate records about what you were watching, and so the FTC brought a case against Vizio, which you know was a smart TV and it worked well with a smart TV. You can connect to Netflix and do lots of stuff with it, but it was also like watching what you were watching and then phoning home and I think potentially phoning to third parties too about like the sort of stuff that you did. And I don't know how much they were actually doing it or they were just reserving the rights to doing it, but they were definitely collecting it. And the FTC in that case said, And that this is one of the cases where they use that unfairness authority. They said, well, that is like harmful to have someone watching, like, you know, what you're watching is pretty sensitive stuff. We obviously can't control it because they don't really know what's going on. And so I'd love to see, you know, either the FTC try to use that case and in similar cases against smart speakers or other folks who are like, again, turning sensors on, like totally unrelated to what I paid money for. But if they're not able to do that, then yeah, I think seeing some new statute to reinforce like what reasonable expectations are when you buy a product would be a great idea.
Do we expect the FTC to bring some sort of hammer down on Facebook in the near future?
For
specifically violating the consent decree.
That's right. Yeah, they had a consent decree from 2011 that from a bunch of previous sins. I'm like the FTC is like, you know, under a huge microscope. And again, like bipartisan criticism from like, you know, Blumenthal, Senator Dick Blumenthal from Connecticut, a relative liberal, and then we have a new, you know, a Republican from Missouri, Hawley, who's, you know, saying FTC is asleep at the wheel. And so like they know they have to get like a much bigger settlement than they've ever gotten in one of these cases. And I expect that they have the, and they know, you know, they Facebook knows like we can't just like sign like, you know, $15 million and we're done. Like Facebook knows that's not in the cards. I expect it to see a pretty substantial fine. You know, whether they can fundamentally reform Facebook, whether they can get Facebook to agree to like stop watching everything I do, not on Facebook. I'm not sure they had legal authority to do that. But again, I think there'll be pressure to try to get some fencing in both Facebook's underlying data practices.